Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 20, text 23 and 24. I'll read 23 first. Jalo ghair nirabhidyanta sevato varshatishvade pashandinam sadvadair vidamarga kaloyata. Translation. When Indra sent forth his rains, the floodwaters broke through the irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields, just as in the Kali Yuga, the atheist false theories break down the boundaries of Vedic injunctions. Text 24. Yamunchan vayubhir nuna Bhutebhyas chamritam gana Yatha shisho vishpataya Kale kale jijerita Yamunchan vayubhirnuna Bhutebhyas chamritam gana Itashisho vishpataya Kale kale jijerita Yamunjanva yubhir nuna Bhutebhyas chamritam gana Itashisho vishpataya Kale kale jijerita. Yamunjan vayubir nuna. Bhutebhyascham ritam gana. Itashisho vishpatayo. Kale kale jijerita. Yamun chan vayubir nuna. Tebyas chamritam gana. Ita shisho vishpataya. Kale kale jijerita. Yamun chan. They released vayubi by the winds. Nuna impelled. Bhutebhya, to all living beings, cha, and amritam, their nectarian water, gana, the clouds, yata, as, ashisha, charitable benedictions, vitpataya, kings, kale kale, from time to time, dvija, by the Brahmins, Irita, encouraged. Translation purported by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The clouds, impelled by the winds, release their nectarian water for the benefit of all living beings, just as kings, instructed by their Brahmin priests, dispense charity to the citizens. Purport, Srila Prabhupada comments, in the rainy season, the clouds, tossed by the wind, deliver water that is welcomed like nectar. When the Vedic followers, the Brahmins, inspire rich men like kings and the wealthy mercantile community to give charity in the performance of great sacrifices, the distribution of such wealth is also nectarian. Four sections of human society, namely the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, are meant to live peacefully in a cooperative mood. This is possible when they are guided by expert Vedic Brahmins, who perform sacrifices and distribute wealth equally. Om Ajnanate Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadhamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Utapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Stra Shri Rupam Sagjatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanditam Shri He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchan Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Mo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you everyone for joining this morning. We are hearing this description of Srila Shukadeva Goswami, the rainy season and the autumn. And spiritual life is sometimes very lofty, very high topics. But Shukadeva Goswami is teaching us how in the world around us we can also perceive lessons of life. You might recall the Avanti Brahmin, he had 24 gurus. So a thoughtful, introspective student can get lessons from so many different phenomena of the material world. The material world is nothing but Krishna's energy. So it's kind of staring one right in the face, some amazing phenomenon like a rainbow. It's an innate beauty that does something to the consciousness and the soul. And it's very hard to deny. If you see a beautiful waterfall, you see this very elaborate plant and fauna. All around this mature world is reminding us, you know, hey, do you think there's something greater out there? Is there something beyond our own self? But the atheistic mentality is not able to fathom that. And that's the cause of so many problems in this world. And that's what the first verse is mentioning here. That just as Indra sends forth his rains, floodwaters, they break through irrigation dikes in the agricultural fields. Just as in Kali Yuga, the atheist false theories break down the boundaries of Vedic injunctions. So this is the unfortunate situation that after Krishna leaves, the age of Kali begins. You know, Kali is held off for some time by Maharaj Parikshit. And he's restricted to the places where there's hoarding of gold. And what's the other place? Meat eating. So, gambling? So he has some confinements. He's still there, but he's not fully able to exhibit his domain because of a very powerful king. And that's mentioned in the next verse, how the king is guided according to the Vedic culture, and they can kick out all of these irreligion. It's explained in our philosophy that the soul is pure, but this material world is contaminating. One cannot be bereft of any type of contamination so long as we're in this material world, or at least conditioned by this material world. That's the nature of this place. This place by nature is a place of irreligion. And that is epitomized by this, the atheist false theories due to insufficient piety. Yesham tantagatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandamoha nirmukto bhajatemam dridhvrataha. Why can't people take to this worship of Krishna? Because they still have these accumulation of sinful activities. Until that is expired, Krishna consciousness is something weird. It's something strange. It's something foreign. And it's something that is not worthwhile. So people are putting something higher than God consciousness. We know that is the greatest anartha. To put anything as more important than our own self-realization. And this is how Maya tries to infiltrate our own consciousness. Something is more important than the goal of life, of reconnecting with Krishna, Krishna Prema. That is illusion. That's Maya. That's even as devotees, our communities get infected by that mentality. Either it's too lofty of a goal, or it's not practical, or whatever. These are all devices of the material energy to prevent us. So we have to come back life after life after life. How many lives have we been, even sadhakas, practicing? We can't even say. So this is the unfortunate situation, the age of Kali. The atheist false theories, they obliterate the Vedic model. And the material energy is such that that which is very wholesome and healthy is looked down as a weakness. That which is vile and corrupt is seen as a strength. So therefore, you know, the land of Bharatvarsha, the original home of Vedic culture, now is looking for other things, more or less. Just to be pious or religious or spiritual is not enough. You have to have material civilization. You have to have strengths in military. And so that the boundaries of the Vedic junctions are forgotten. And this is, as we've been mentioning, Kali's position. In the next verse, it explains that In a proper system, the kings or the government is guided by expert Brahmins who, by the performance of their sacrifices and distribution of wealth, they keep the entire country in peace. So this is a very, this is Krishna's system. Nowadays we have democracy, but Prabhupada was not in favor of this. This is another invention. It's a modern concoction. And we see how people remain dissatisfied, even if they elect someone they thought was going to show them the hope or the promise, they also get disappointed. And the president can only have a few years before he also has to relinquish his throne, so to speak, his position. So these verses are related because the Vedic injunction also has to do with government, how society is meant to be run, so that people can be peaceful. And believe it or not, this is actually part of Prabhupada's mission. Our movement is not meant to be a side, you know, component of Western civilization. It's not just supposed to be some little center stuck in a huge mass of Western conceptions. No, actually, it's supposed to eventually gain enough momentum to reestablish Vedic culture everywhere in the world. That was Prabhupada's ambition, nothing less than that. So we do have this grand, grandiose vision, and that actually gives us life to work for a higher cause, to work for something sublime, that an ideal. That is very nourishing. In other words, Prabhupada thought big, and Prabhupada is encouraging us to think big. If we set our goals low, or the bar low, then we'll do what we can. But if our vision is very big and very inspiring, we can tap into an even greater power that we don't even know really we have. So this was the mood in the early days where the devotees really felt like we're going to take over the world. Why? Not for us, but to establish Krishna supremacy. And this was actually the ambition of King Yudhishthir Maharaj. In the Bhagavatam, it describes the Rajasuya sacrifice. And because that is very much related here, I thought I might share an excerpt from that section, if I can find it here. Because we're hearing about, this is the Brahmin's duty actually, they are performing sacrifices. So if you can bear with me, I'd like to recount a beautiful description of this section. Yes, here it is. Just bear with me one moment here. So, if you may recall the chronology, that Maharaj Yudhishthir is very eager to see the welfare of the citizens. He's become the emperor of the world. He set out a challenge that I'd like to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, and therefore, if anyone objects to this, then they have to settle it through military. And this is how the emperor achieves domination. That all the other kings have to face subordination to the king, or if they disagree with that, then they have to fight. This was only a few thousand years ago. We have such massive battles going on. This is actually also part of Vedic culture. The Kshatriya, there's the role of the Kshatriyas. There's the role of the Brahmins, like we're hearing about. But very, very intense, all-encompassing battles is also not absent from our scriptures. So Yudhishthira has just performed this epic sacrifice, which actually establishes, he wants the whole world to know what is Krishna's position. Because Krishna's appearing just like an ordinary person. At the Rajasiya sacrifice, they have to decide who is the most worthy person of worship. And Krishna's pastimes are such that some people are saying, I think Bhishma Dev. Someone else saying, I think Arjuna. I think Yudhishthira. People are not sure who is the most worthy person of worship. So Sahadev, he says, he has a beautiful speech where he explains, actually Krishna is worthy of the worship. He's obviously the most qualified person in this whole assembly. He's the soul of all living beings. And he's standing before us. But only devotees have that vision to see that. So after hearing the speech, everyone applauds. And jai, jai. They're feeling actually transcendental ecstasy. Because when Krishna's on the planet, the spiritual world descends. We think we have to go to the spiritual world. When Krishna comes here, the spiritual world is experienced even in this on this planet because of their love. Like in Dwarka, we have these beautiful paintings. Krishna's arriving to Dwarka or he's walking down. They can feel the same transcendental ecstasy of the spiritual world here. That's the beauty of this Bhoma Lila. So they've decided, yes, Krishna should be worshipped. But then Shishupal, who is one of the greatest demons, he has a rant in his personal envy toward Krishna. Does not allow him to appreciate that. And so he foolishly challenges all of the kings. He says, no, I reject this. I'm prepared to fight with any of you. And so there's about to be a huge obstruction to the sacrifice. We know that Krishna takes care of the issue with his chakra. And Shishupal's finished. So the yajna goes on. And now we'll hear a little bit about, because this verse we were talking about the role of the Brahmins who perform sacrifices for the benefit of society. So this is a beautiful description, just to paint our picture a little bit of a different time, a different place, a different culture of where Krishna is really in the center. King Yudhishthira, in a gorgeous chariot yoked to excellent horses, was present there along with his queens, including Draupadi. And their features were so beautiful that it appeared as if the great Rajasiya sacrifice were standing there in person, along with the different functions of the sacrifice. Following the Rajasiya sacrifice, there was the Vedic ritualistic duty known as Patni Samyagya. The sacrifice, which one performs along with one's wife, was also duly conducted by the priests of King Yudhishthira. As Queen Draupadi and King Yudhishthira were taking their Abhrita bath, the citizens of Hastinapur, as well as the demigods, began to beat on drums and blow trumpets out of feelings of happiness. And there was a shower of flowers from the sky. When the king and queen finished their bath in the Ganges, all the other citizens, consisting of all the Varnas, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, took their baths in the Ganges. After taking his bath, King Yudhishthira dressed in a new silken cloth and wrapper and decorated himself with valuable jewelry. The king not only dressed himself and decorated himself, but also gave clothing and ornaments to all the priests and others who had participated in the yajnas. In this way, he worshipped them all. He constantly worshipped his friends, his family members, his relatives, his well-wishers, and everyone present. And because he was a Vaishnava, a great devotee of Lord Narayan, he knew how to treat everyone well. This is a very nice point, that he's actually worshipping everyone. He worshipped his friends, his family members, his relatives, his well-wishers, and everyone present. So worshipping is also can be given to these individuals. Because why? He's a Vaishnav. So he knows how to treat everyone well. The Mayavadi philosopher's endeavor to see everyone as God is an artificial attempt at oneness. But a Vaishnav sees every living entity as part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. When everyone was refreshed after bathing, was dressed in silken clothing with jeweled earrings, flower garlands, turbans, long wrappers, and pearl necklaces, they looked altogether like the demigods from heaven. This was especially true of the women, who were very nicely dressed. Each wore a golden belt around the waist. They were all smiling, with spots of tilak and curling hair scattered here and there. This combination was very attractive. Those persons who'd participated in the Rajasiya sacrifice, including the most cultured priests, the Brahmins, demigods, sages, saints, and citizens of Pitraloka, were all very much satisfied with the dealings of King Yudhishthira. At the end, they happily departed for their residence. While returning to their homes, they talked of the dealings of King Yudhishthira, and even after continuous talks of his greatness, they were not satiated. just as one may drink nectar over and over again and never be satisfied. After the departure of all the others, Maharaj Yudhisthira remained in the inner circle of his friends, including Lord Krishna, not allowing them to leave. Lord Krishna could not refuse the request of the king. Krishna therefore sent back all the heroes of the Yadu dynasty, Shamba and others. All of them returned to Dwarka, and Lord Krishna personally remained to give pleasure to the king. So, at these times, the demigods used to visit this planet. The opulence of Yudhishthira Maharaj is excelling that of the demigods. We know that the Pandavas, they received an assembly hall which was more opulent than that of Indra. So in this time of history, all the devas, the sages, the saints, they used to come and participate in these functions. So this is the perfection of one form of sacrifice, and this is the epitome of Vedic culture, which is to establish Krishna's position throughout the world. And that's our mission, and we're in a different age. We're in the age of Kali. We have a much more difficult, in one sense, challenge before us. And we can't go without concluding that the sacrifice for this age is different also. It has a different shape, a different form, and a different potency, because the mercy from the holy name is, what can we say? It's the most merciful incarnation of Krishna. It's more merciful than Krishna himself. Here they have Krishna's direct presence. But when the pure holy name is descending, that's an even more merciful feature of Krishna. This is what we hear. This is what the Acharyas explain. So that pure chanting of the holy name is the highest form of sacrifice, especially in this age. And that's what we are striving for. That purity of chanting that can actually invoke Krishna's descent in the form of the holy name to establish his own supremacy over all things. The holy name is glorified beyond anything in this world. It is the highest feature of mercy. And it benedicts all living beings who chant it, who hear it, who partake in it. This is what we need to do this Saturday. We're performing just as there's a Rajasuya Yagya, we'll have the Nam Yagya. And all of our congregation should come and show our support in our own way as we endeavor to establish Krishna supremacy here in this temple, as a community in Rogers Park, in this state, in this country, in this world. On our small scale, we have to do what we can to try to bring about, and the purification is implicit. It's already invested in that process. And by Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda's mercy, we can experience an amount of mercy that's even beyond what's available through other types of sacrifice also. Namely, the awakening of the inherent Krishna prema in the realm of Sri Vrindavan, which is the highest abode of transcendental love. So the holy name has the power to awaken our original constitution through chanting offenselessly. Then Gauranga Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, want to bring us back home. This is how they want to do it. So these were a few thoughts on this little section here. Sorry, I don't have too much more. We'll see if there's any question or comment. We can look a little deeper in some of these if required, but yes, Hari Sharma.
You made a few references in your class that I'm connecting together. You talked about how when somebody has very sinful tendencies and they don't think Krishna consciousness is very worthwhile. Mm-hmm. Towards the end of your class, you were speaking about how the holy name can lead us to the abode of prema. Mm-hmm. And the reflection I was thinking about was, I guess we're sort of getting in the way of the descent of mercy, either due to our sinful propensities or our laziness or slowness, whatever it may be. You know, we're getting in the way of the descent of mercy. And if we allow the process to work on us, then we can be purified and, attain the goal of our life. But I was just thinking, what specifically, is there something specifically that we can do to expedite, say, the descent of mercy in hearts, or to increase affection for Krishna? Because affection is not something we can just manufacture, right? It's not, and also bhakti is not a material thing. So is there anything we can do? You know, yes, we should chant, but sometimes maybe even at least myself, my chanting isn't so fruitful or deep, you know. So anyways, what can we do to enhance the descent of prema? What mindset? Yeah, that's a better question.
The main point that is mentioned by the acharyas, to get the pratific taste or attraction that we're looking for, as you described, is to approach, serve, and hear from the most advanced devotees. Without that, the descent of mercy, the devotees are the means by which that mercy comes into our heart. The devotees that are carrying that particular mood. You associate with anyone, you're going to imbibe something of their mood. Devotees all have different moods. People out in the material world have different moods. As soon as you associate with someone, you're kind of brushing up, you're getting some of their mood, whether it's good or bad. So these most advanced devotees who are like radiating with pure love of Godhead, if we can somehow or other get their association, and they, you know, physically ideally, but even if they've departed, there's still ways of connecting with that energy, their mercy. So somehow or other, coming in contact with them, hearing from them, trying to serve them, begging for their mercy, then these little drops, these drops of amrita, of nectar and braja prema, can, a little mist is enough to then ideally awaken within us a desire, an intense greed. Why don't I have that? How can I get it? That's what the acharya described. If our intelligence considers, how can I obtain that? That's the point that we want. That's what we want to develop, that eagerness. By dint of that and the strength and maturing and growth of that, our desire for material world will dwindle and dwindle proportionately. So that is the answer that's given by the acharyas of how to get that. That comes from the devotees who have it. They can, Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness infectious like an infectious disease. So you have to find someone who's really infected, and then you can get infected also. And if we don't get infected in this way, in a positive way, then we can go on for lifetimes, years and years, and not really understand what we're even doing. What is the point of what we're doing? That's the niyamagraha. Doing and doing, but why? Maybe I'm forced to do. I like living here, so I have to do it. Or it's just what we do. That's described as a fault by Rupa Goswami. To do the activities without knowing the purpose. So then knowing that purpose, that'll give a meaning to all the activities, because then all those activities are performed with that goal in mind. So why am I doing this? Because that will help me get to where I want to go, where I need to go. And then eventually a desperation. That's all I want. I don't want anything else. Krishna wants to see a deep desperation for him. We get desperate for so many other things. Really, we get really bent out of shape if we lose our laptop, if we lose our airline tickets. How much we freak out? Not you personally, the laptop. You made that joke, but we all know that joke. But how much we get bent out of shape over some little stuff? How often do we get bent out of shape about not having Krishna? So that we can work on. Hare Krishna. Anyone else? Okay, now we'll have the second part of the class. Jai Baladev Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. This is just an appreciation of a point Bhaktisiddhanta made, and it's very important for the, you were related to the point you were making. This Saturday we have a 12-hour kirtan. And although we hear in the Bhagavatam and Prahlad's teachings that the nine processes of devotional service, and Prabhupada makes a point that any form of devotional service is essentially the same, you could get the benefit. But in the Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav, there's a chapter called the Chanting of the Holy Name. Bhaktisiddhanta, however, does make a distinction between Hari Kirtan and Hari Katha, the music on the outside and the music on the inside. In this session, he basically makes a point that it may be easy to tune a mridanga or play beautiful melodies on a harmonium, but it's not so easy to stay in tune to Krishna consciousness or remain in harmony with our higher spiritual nature. And we see that why do we tune our instruments? Because if we don't, they don't sound good. And when we don't tune our character and we don't sound good, we start criticizing and fault finding. We see that all the time. And we see that one of the most greatest kirtaniyas in our movement, Prabhupada's disciples, Iyengar. Why were people so attracted to Iyengar? It's not because he had a tuned voice or he asked people to tune the instruments. It's because he tuned his character. He has such a taste for Hari Katha, and that's why he was so attracted. So my question is that, like Prabhupada was mentioning yesterday, Jamastami Prabhu, when he got initiated by Sarup Goswami, it was 19 people who got initiated with him. He was the only one that remained. Of course, Sarup Goswami, I'm sure, initiated people later, of course, I'm sure. But what are some steps we can do to maintain our Krishna consciousness and emphasize the music on the inside? Because we see that that's not so easy.
Yeah, the kirtan is like $1,000. If you have it, you use it carefully, it can get you anything you want. But if you misuse it, if you squander it, you lose it, you're not going to get any benefit. So the chanting especially it's meant to be led by the most pure devotees. You know, we tend to think whoever's musically the most, but actually the most advanced devotee should lead the kirtan, whoever they are. Maybe they don't know how to hold a beat. Maybe they're 70 years old. So the purity is really the force. And I was just, you know, use a lot of metaphors and now. So like tuning the instruments, you know, sometimes it's like tuning our ego. There's a lot of mercy that's available in chanting, but there's also the tendency of the impure mind to try to make it a performance, to try to put ourselves in the spotlight. And it can be consciously or unconsciously. And that is where the kirtan loses potency. And therefore, no matter how loud it is, it's not going to actually awaken bhakti. And so the chanting, one's chanting is synonymous with one's level of advancement. We can't really lead a nice kirtan if we're not strictly following and practicing ourselves, surrendered. And if we are doing our best to serve Guru, the Vaishnavas, the holy name, no matter what kind of kirtan it is, it will have the bhakti shakti. That's what we want, bhakti shakti. So a lot more, the most important is the consciousness and the mood in chanting. I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a tendency, especially when if we try to develop a nice voice, we're going to sing. We can get caught up in the musicality of the singing. This is where the kirtan really can plummet. If we are too infatuated with the sound of the voice, our own voice, and the singing, the chanting becomes more of a vocal performance. It's very unfortunate because then the purpose, and are we even conscious of Krishna while we're chanting? So all those things are secondary. The main thing should just be the earnest desire to try to please Krishna with our life and attentively chanting his holy name. Okay, anything else? Okay, we'll wrap it up here. Always contend to their services. We described these Vedic injunctions being covered in this age of Kali and the importance of performing our sacrifice. We heard about the glorious Rajasuya sacrifice of King Yudhishthira, and we reflected a little bit how we want to perform our activities with that right mood and desire and eagerness for attaining the goal. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.